The Umbrella Hour is brought to you by the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. This is Dr. On, board-certified clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. I'm handing this over to you, Xander, to introduce our guest this hour.
Thank you, On. Yes, our guest today is Julie Mayfield. Julie is an intersex advocate, influencer, author, and actress. And she's here to talk to us about intersex variations, the intersex movement, and also the critical urgency for better education among the masses, which sounds very interesting. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me. I can't wait. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Julie, what is the critical issue intersex people are facing right now that you think requires this immediacy to jump on education?
Well, I've always felt that there's an immediate need for education. I feel like things do not change in this planet, on this earth, unless we are constantly talking about issues that we find challenging in and that we have stories rooted in. And so I feel like the only way to change perceptions is by being honest and in your truth and sharing what's going on in your own life. Because oftentimes, just because it's not in somebody else's wheelhouse doesn't mean that they are ignorant. It just means that they've never come across it before. And sometimes you need to share our stories and share these ways just to be able to influence change. And the urgency, though, it seems, is, again, not enough people really know what intersex is. We were just basically talking prior to hitting record that I was in the Pride Parade in Orlando last year as one of the Grand Marshals. And last year, Watermark had done this big story about what the I in LGBTQIA stands for. And a lot of people have no idea, even in our own community, what the I meant. And I thought, and that's our own tight-knit community. So if they don't know, then really across the board, a lot of people do not know what intersex is. And even as an advocate and you start to do podcasts and stories and you're in articles and newspapers, you find that a lot of the general laymen in the world have no idea that we exist. And so when other rules start to come into play and other laws start getting passed about gender-affirming care and all these other things that are up against the rest of our community, it falls back on us too. And because we've always been in this marginalized linear line, we're overtly affected by some of these other rulings. And people are like, well, who are these people? I didn't even know that was a thing. What does intersex mean? And so that's the urgency, right? Is that everybody's at risk of being erased and losing essential care. But in our community, we're on a almost dire need to make sure that you understand that we exist. In wiping out these other things, you're hurting our community too.
I've experienced this on different topics within the LGBT community. When people add the I always say to them, what do you actually do for the intersex people in your within your service reach? And what services do you provide? What books do you have? What are you actually doing? And it's usually nothing, right? And then I say, then take it off. Either do something or take it off, because you're just using it as a way to signal something that is not accurate. But I find that I started doing classroom presentations about life as a young lesbian, right? I was in my 20s when I started in the mid-1980s. And it was one of those things where it made sense that people asked the questions that they asked. When did you choose to be gay? How'd your family deal with it? You know, those kinds of questions, which I got to tell you, I was in San Diego, California. I went away for many years. And when I went back to San Diego, it was probably about 25 years later. I had always been speaking in classes, but I was doing it again in San Diego. And somebody asked the question, when did you choose to be gay? And I thought, here we are, right?
Yeah.
It's that thing where it's not as if the education doesn't happen. It does. The outreach happens. The laws pass. All these things happen. But you're right, on that day-to-day man and woman of the street, the message isn't getting out. Even though there's been Intersex Society for North America was active for a number of years. And as David talked in a recent episode, they were on the Oprah Winfrey show. I mean, that's a huge audience.
Yes.
But it was a long time ago, right? There's a lot of information available. There's been a lot of outreach and education and awareness and training. And still, even within LGBT, let's say QI plus community, people don't know what the I is.
Somebody said, I heard recently, I was at my residential bar in Orlando that is my home space. It always has been, and celebrating its 22nd, 23rd year. And so I have been going there that long and everybody knows me and that's great. And I love being a part of the community. And somebody said, what's the I mean? And somebody else said invisible. And I went, well, yes, it is. It should. It could be. I'm like, for all the visibility that the other groups in the acronym get, I certainly could fall under invisible because people don't know and they're not asking. And then when you tell them, they literally are like, wait, I barely understand gay, lesbian, and trans, and possibly queer. This is like trying to wrap my head around something. I'm on TikTok. I have a huge platform on TikTok, and I've spent the last 4 or 5 years just really educating people that aren't even in the community. And you see more creators coming forward and telling their stories. But you come across a lot of people that'll say, I've never heard of that. I've met people in the medical community that are like, I haven't heard of that. There, I've had doctors in my own life where I walk in and say, I am 47XXY. This is what I'm going through. This is what I'm trying not to go through. And this is how I think we can deal with it. And they look at you and scratch their heads and they go, that's not a thing. And you're like, you're a doctor. And then you basically feel crazy in your own narrative and in your own body. And then you find that you are educating the medical community and you're it's just, there are times that you just.
So what happens is if it's a general practice, then they adhere to a general practice, focusing on diagnoses, treating the diagnoses if needed, and offering preventative care. If it's a specialty, then the person is referred out. Back 30, 40 years ago, they didn't have many specialties. I should probably take it back even further. 50, 60 years ago, they did not have as many specialties as we have today. I've heard the argument that trans healthcare should not be a specialty because then you reduce the number of practitioners who could potentially treat the trans community. So there are two sides to that coin. Really, there are three sides to that coin. The two sides are, one, you know what you're doing, or the other side is you don't. Because the patient or client is teaching you. The same could be said about the intersex population. So the third side of that is people go and get specialized training so that they really are understanding the communities in which we live and treat. The other piece to that is if you look at the mass delivery of information, it is mass. It is across many channels, not just TikTok, but all social media. And then the entire outlets of the news media. Well, when Oprah Winfrey covered the intersex population, good for her, but that was it. Nobody else picked up on that. Had there been a mass delivery of this content, then I think we would be positioned differently. The medical community is famous for just adhering to their practice. So if it's a general practice, then they adhere to general practice. If it's a specialty, then they just refer you out. And outside of that, there isn't much to learn, because they're focused on what they're doing and what they know and what they were taught, and that's it. Back 30, 40 years ago, it was a little bit different because we didn't have as many specialties. I should take it back a little further, 50, 60 years ago, we didn't have as many specialties as we have today. And I've heard the argument that for instance, trans healthcare should not be a specialty because then you reduce the number of practitioners and physicians who can actually treat the trans community. So there are two sides of that coin. Really, there's three sides. The two sides are you either know what you're doing, and the other side is you don't, because the patient or client is teaching you about themselves. So the same could be said about the intersex population. So the third side of that is people go and they get specialized training so that they really are understanding the communities in which we live and treat. The other piece to that is if you look at the mass delivery of information, it's mass. It's across many channels, across many venues. It's not just TikTok or Instagram. It's all social media. And then the entire outlets of the news media. Well, Oprah Winfrey, good for her, but that was it. That was it. Nobody else picked up on that. Had there been a mass delivery of this content, then I think we would be positioned a bit differently. We don't see the mass delivery of this type of dialogue. It's not even dialogue. It's here, we have information about this population.
Yeah, there's a organization here in Florida called Equality Florida, and they do a lot for the community, and then they do a lot for the trans community. And I went to their gala. I've done a lot. I partnered a lot with them over the years, and they've been more receptive recently in receiving intersex information. But one of my good friends there, Nicole Parker, had come up to me at a gala a couple of years ago, and she said, "I'm so glad you're on the scene, but I don't want you to get discouraged because the trans community is a good 20 years behind where they should be in visibility. And therefore, the intersex community is a good 30 years behind that. You might not see this change in your lifetime." And I am seeing some change, right? And that's good. And I see the change that's important in the moment. I love that more younger people that are aware of their intersex variation are starting to stand up and speak about it. So I do see that change. When I came on the scene, even when I had to transition medically, in 2018, because of everything my body was going through and the way I was presenting, I did not identify as trans. I still don't. I am very much an intersex female. But when I had to go through that at the NIH, I panicked. And I was like, I don't know anybody else like me anywhere. And I had to go back and figure out how I was going to do my name change, how I was going to get my documents changed, because I knew that I was going to present more female. And my whole life up until that point had been male presenting. And I was terrified. And I had to come back to Florida. And thankfully, I have great friends because I used to work at Disney in my 20s. And I had people that were stepping in to help me pro bono. And one of my good friends, Irene, who's my personal attorney, she was like, "Let's do this together. In the process, you can come educate my students at the university as more and more intersex people come forward and are going to need political help. And so you can educate them, we can help you, and we will go through this together and navigate these things." But I was the first one to change case law in the state of Florida in 2018, and then Alabama in 2022. And I thought, who's going to grab the baton when I don't want to run the race anymore? And so I'm excited that people are starting to come into their own and do that. But we still have a lot of work to do. But that's true of anything, I guess, right?
I think it was when I read the book Middlesex was the first time that I read something that was more on the popular. It wasn't an academic book. It wasn't a documentary featuring individuals. It was a novel that was written, and the main subject, the main person in the book
was intersex.
Yeah. And so I'm glad I read it. I had started to read it four or five times, but the first chapter is difficult to get through. It reminds me of scripture where so-and-so begot so-and-so, begot so-and-so, begot. It's like the genealogy. What is all this? And I just kept putting it down and putting it down. And thankfully, I pushed through. And then I really loved the story. You know, Julia, you said that your intersex variation, you said 47XXY. David referred to his as Klinefelter syndrome. These are the same thing, right? Different ways of talking about, or are they different?
Okay, we have to go back a little bit. So in the 40s, Klinefelter syndrome was discovered or put into place by a Dr. Klinefelter. Patricia Jacobs, who is a British researcher, had actually discovered it first, but he, for some reason, got naming rights to it. And he was the one that supposedly found out that males were born with the extra X. Now, because of all the research that's been done, even in the last 20 years, it is safe to say that some XXY individuals like myself are born with more female characteristics than male characteristics. And because we all start out as females, maybe the extra chromosome that I was assigned is the Y and not the X, right? But for many years, it was XXY. You had to be male. You could only get it. So when I went to the NIH, when I was diagnosed in 94 at 17, I was in high school and they said, "You have Klinefelter syndrome." And then years later, fast forward to 43, after all these years of going through these different things in my medical journey, I'm at the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, and I had 8 doctors on my protocol. And one of the doctors said, "You can't really call Klinefelter syndrome and XXY the same thing. They're not the same thing." Klinefelter syndrome is a one-off of being XXY. It is technically a disease of your testes. It happens in the testicles. Not every XXY will be born with a set of testes. Therefore,
Julie, would it be more accurate to say that Klinefelter's is XYX and what you have is XXY, because there'd be more of the more female versus more male?
I mean, maybe, but they don't break it down like that. They just call it XXY. Yeah. It's like Turner syndrome is XO, right? So on that intersex spectrum, if you were to picture men on one side and females on the other side, I always tell people there's a bridge in between both of those sexes. And anything that falls on that arcing bridge or under that umbrella on that bridge is considered intersex by the medical community. And at the moment, there are over 60 plus variations that fit on that bridge. So you could be trisomy X, XXX, you could be XXY, you could be XO, right? Those XXY is one of the more common ones. But to go back to Klinefelter syndrome really fast, you have to be XXY to develop Klinefelter syndrome. But not every XXY will develop Klinefelter syndrome, and you won't know until they go through those puberty stages in the way that it affects the testicles. I was born with one ovary and one testy, so I don't have two testicles. And by definition of that, based on what the National Institute of Health was telling me, you can't say I have Klinefelter syndrome. I'm XXY. And going back to, it was a huge jump for us, even when I went to the NIH, because when I went, I had been a moderator on Facebook in a group called the Klinefelter Society, which is a British-based support group. And they came in and said, hey, we're looking for males that have XXY that can come out here for a week and run through a battery of tests. We're not going to tell you what we're testing for, but when you leave, you'll have a total blueprint for what you need to do for the rest of your life. And I thought, I'm not married. I'm single. Can't have kids. Let's take one for the team and go do this for the betterment of everybody in this community. And then I showed up that week and they were like, you didn't bring anybody with you? And I said, no, I'm a big boy. I don't think I need anybody to hold my hand. And I said, but why'd you ask? And they said, we have found that in the middle of the week of testing, our subjects often have a mental breakdown. And I went, oh, well, do you have a liquor store nearby? I got this, right? But then by the middle of the week is when they told me, we did your hormone draws and you produce more estrogen, but it's still not a quantifying living level. And your testosterone is really not a living level. They did hormone draws every 15 minutes for 3 hours. And my highest pull of estrogen was 40. And my highest draw of testosterone was 7. And they said, we're not even sure how you're functioning at this point. And they said, furthermore, this is what you have going on in your body. You were born with one ovary, one testy. You have a partial uterus. You have a cracked fallopian tube. You have a female-sized heart, male-sized lungs, a diminished Adam's apple. They kept going through. And I said, I feel like Frankenstein. And they were like, well, and you now have osteoporosis of your lower back and spine, and you've developed lupus. There's not a cure for that, as you know, but because your body responds better to estrogen, we're going to put you on a crap ton to slow everything else down. And it's not a cure, but we think you'll get more out of this body. And I said, well, how long are we talking? And they said, if you go home and do nothing except have the ovary and testy removed because it's causing precancer in your lower floor, if you did that, just that, and didn't go on the estrogen, we think you'll be dead by 48. And so I called my parents and I got them on the phone and I said, what are we talking? I don't necessarily want to transition. I would like to live longer, but what are we talking about? You know, my body has been through so much already. And my dad's like, you know what? He goes, I'd rather lose you as my daughter in 15 to 16 years than lose you as my son in 5. You're going to take the estrogen. The change is going to happen and we're going to do what a family does and surround you and support you because you're still our kid.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing that your father said. And how fortunate for you to have a family like that. I know it makes a difference. Yeah. My family has always been very supportive. My family's Catholic, Mexican. You were saying before we hit recording, your family's Irish. I don't know if you grew up Catholic.
I did not. I mean, I'm third generation Irish. I grew up Southern Baptist. I often joke and tell people we're the part of the Baptist religion where your preacher can go out on a Saturday night, get rip-roaring drunk, sleep with prostitutes, repent Sunday morning and cry, and the whole congregation forgives him, you know, and then he steals money from the offering plate. That's the Baptist we are, but you know.
That's so funny. Oh my God.
But I did grow up with a strong faith, and I wouldn't be where I am today without my faith, and certainly without my parents and their influence. So
yeah, maybe we can talk about faith issues. You mentioned that in 2018, you had to transition. And that was because of this. The doctors were telling you your physical well-being is in jeopardy. Your life, the length of your life,
yes,
is going to be shortened. And so, but they didn't say go on testosterone. That's what happened to David. They put him on testosterone. For you, even though he has, what is that called? It's like undescended testes, but they're very, very small and produce a very small amount of testosterone too. But I don't think he has the same volume or number of female reproductive organs that you do. So maybe that's why.
It's going to be different for everybody. I tell people, even in advocating, that you could have a room full of 80 XXY individuals, right? And while some of their characteristics will be similar and they will probably gravitate towards each other and be like, oh, I think they're XXY or I think they may be intersex, their actual journey and what they've gone through medically is going to be a whole lot different because they're going to be in different parts of the country where education may be fluent or not, where population may be fluent or not. You know, Dr. Ahn could probably add into this too, but like you have all those different criterias in play. And then your body is not, we are not black and white.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ahn and Sander Kagg. And our guest this hour is Julie Mayfield, who is an intersex advocate, author, and actress. We hope that you've enjoyed listening to her talk about intersex variation. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ahn and Sander Kagg. And our guest this hour is Julie Mayfield, who is an intersex advocate. Julie is here today to talk about her intersex variation, the movement, and the critical urgency to help the masses understand intersex variation. Let's get back to our show.
So everything that I have going on in my body is not going to be true of the two or three XXY people to my left or right. We had just different things going on. And That's what made my case study so different. And I've even had backlash within my own community because they're like, you're not like me. And I'm like, okay, I may not be like you exactly, but we are going through some of the same challenges when it comes to essential care. You still have to go tell your doctor what's going on, and whether they believe you or not, you're going to have to educate them. And so in my situation, normally with Klinefelter's and XXY, they will put you on more testosterone. But when I found out in 1994 at 17 that I had KS and XXY, that's what they did. They put me on a crap ton of testosterone. And then by 22, I had a prostate cancer scare while I was working in New York City. And the geneticist I went and saw in New York City through AFTRA, which is the theater union, he said, I don't know anything about genetics. He was a younger guy. I don't know anything about genetics. What I can tell you is you're on so much testosterone from 17 even to 22, that if you stay on this course, it is probably inevitable that in your 30s or 40s, your liver will shut down and you'll have other issues. Maybe don't take as much testosterone. I mean, it's usually testosterone, right? And a lot of guys that have XXY or men that present that way will go, I'm on testosterone. I've never had to have the other. But in truth, even in science, when you research more, you have to have a quantifying level of both. You really need, think about all the cisgendered women out there that have issues that have to go on extra hormones after menopause to regulate, right? And you'll meet women that are cisgendered and not intersex, and maybe they're endosex and they've never had an issue. And they're telling you, oh yeah, I have to take a testosterone pellet, or I have to take testosterone pills because my levels are off or my thyroid's off. I mean, when people talk about what their bodies are going through, it is something that affects all of us. You have to have a consistent level, but we can't operate without one or the other.
We all need homeostasis. Without a homeostatic state, your body gets into trouble. Your brain does as well. Estrogen is very good for the brain. It helps us remember. It helps us communicate. I can always tell when I am speaking to someone who is in a premenopausal state and lacks estrogen. That person has a difficult time recalling words and functioning. In general, anyone will have a hard time functioning. So estrogen is crucial. And in some of these instances, now this is not the intersex population necessarily, but it certainly is the individual who has the potential for developing breast cancer. Doctors will be wary of treating this person with estrogen. Individuals whose family has a history of breast cancer and who is beginning to feel the effects of premenopause struggle on what to do. For these individuals, medical treatment can be very challenging. And I think when anyone hears the word cancer, it is a scare. So to your point, everyone in this instance is in need of testing to have that diagnosis verified, and then also to be monitored if it is decided they choose to opt for some of the treatment modalities that perhaps in other instances would be contraindicated and not prescribed. And also to your point earlier, when you said none of you are alike, no, of course not, because there are so many variations. It is unfortunate that we aren't having more of these discussions and insisting that the medical schools embark on further training. In medical school, you receive a limited amount of training. Medical education limits are really basically to the practical hands-on training and requires more intensive residential training. That comes after the 4 years of training in medical school. There is a lot of material to cover and not a lot of time.
I think what's interesting too is I've noticed when I talk to other people in the intersex community, especially concerning issues that affect all humans, but they affect us in very different ways, right? One of the things my mom had always said is that whenever I get really tired or sick, my blood sugars would spike, but they would spike to insane levels. And so, of course, you know, I go into the doctor and doctors would be like, well, you're diabetic. And then another doctor would say, but you're not diabetic. And then so it was this constant back and forth. And I remember being in the hospital once after I had to get an amputation on my toe. And I remember, and I was in a British hospital, and one of the nurses was freaking out because she was like, you should be in a coma. Your numbers would say that you should be in a coma. And the doctor came around the corner and he knew XXY. And he said, no, not necessarily. It said intersex individuals tend to have really higher markers in some of these things that would be really bad for somebody that's not. And he's like, but they're functioning. Our studies and where we should be focused is, why is she able to function with a level of 900 something and she's not delusional and she's able to walk around the room and she's not like, why is her body able to do this? And he goes, maybe there's something to the fact that you're a little bit of both and you're kind of hybrid, but we should be researching that and not condemning you for not being, because he goes, I guarantee you, and he said this in front of me, he said, I guarantee you, if we treat her like somebody that's diabetic and just has regular diabetic issues, and we're not concerned about everything else that's going on in her body, she's going to feel like she's at death's door. And I thought, that's very interesting. That's what we should be studying, right? We should be studying people that are this combination of both, and why some of us flourish and do well under circumstances that a regular individual would not be doing well, and vice versa. I've always said maybe there is knowledge in the intersex community that would really further along the endosex health community. Maybe we're the key to something. You don't treat us that way. You treat us as diseased and needing to go into a home, and you don't believe us. And that.
Yeah, I cover the gamut on the different types of diabetes. That's another area that is not talked about enough. So lately, now you read and hear about type 3. Well, there's way more than three types. And so we're excluding people. That is another area that absolutely needs some attention, and it doesn't get enough attention because there are people walking around getting misdiagnosed or mistreated.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with that.
Julie, I'm curious, before 2018, before you started the estrogen, would you have considered yourself part of gay male community?
I did, actually, yes. I just assumed I was gay. I did drag for many years and as a performer and actor. It was really weird because even in my book, I talk about how from an early age, I felt split. There are days that I wanted to sit inside and watch NASCAR and drink long neck beers. And then there were days where I wanted to lay in bed in heels and eat bonbons like Marie Antoinette. And it was just very split. And I didn't know what that meant. And growing up, I thought, gosh, this must be what it means to be gay. You know, I would do drag, and that was my answer to fleshing out that feminine energy. And then I taught pageants for many years and coached girls for beauty pageants, and like that fed into that too. And I did drag, but I never identified as trans. So even when the NIH came back and said, we're going to give you all of this estrogen and it's going to make you. And I actually said to them, I said, that's going to cause me to transition. And I don't identify as trans. And they said, well, it's really just going to push you further into your female psyche, which you're already halfway there anyway. It's just going to swing you to that end of the spectrum for you. But you really are pretty much a cross section of both. It just comes down to, do you want to live longer or are you cashing in your cards now? I mean, out of everything I went through, that was harder for me because I have a career as a male. I'm an uncle. People know me in film and television as a guy. I just assumed I was gay. Look, women's lives are difficult, and I'm not sure I wanted to sign up to be part of the Me Too movement. And so I literally was like, I don't know what to do. You know, that's when I did go back to my parents and we talked about that. I don't know what to do. I do feel like in accepting that fate, it opened the doors for my advocacy. You know, before then, I didn't understand my purpose and I didn't understand what I was supposed to do with this life. And post NIH, I've used it as a way to tell that story and educate. And it's just really weird too, because I think of it sometimes, if you think of like a metamorphosing caterpillar, I respond to my old self, Bradford. It's not my dead name. I mean, I don't follow any of the trans ideology, but Bradford, he went through some really tough things in those first 43 years and he's exhausted. He's still very much a part of me. I am both. I am intersex, but Julie's pretty. And Julie has the mouthpiece. And Julie, because of the estrogen, as Dr. Anna just said, she knows her words and she's collectively maybe a little smarter. And I laugh because Brad was smart, but Julie's brilliant, right? Julie has come out and said, you did the hard work. Let me do the easy work. And let's get through this life together. Let me finish the race for you. And it's weird because it feels like as Julie, I'm literally sprinting towards that finish line, but I have the support of everybody. And when I look back at Bradford, sometimes he had the support of everybody, but he really was dealing with the trauma and the growing up and not knowing and doing his best to survive. And so it's very interesting. I'm blessed because I've gotten to live in both vessels, right? And I've gotten to see how the world treats both sexes and both genders. And it's been an interesting ride, but it's been crazy.
Yeah. I'm similar to you. I also feel blessed, and I don't refer to the name that my parents gave me as a dead name. I absolutely don't like that message. I think it's very disrespectful to parents and could be possibly traumatic and in adding maybe to the grief that they might already be experiencing. I was 39 years old when I started testosterone. I'm 59 now, so it's been a while. But I would imagine, I think I was at events because I just moved from Orlando to the Portland and Oregon area. I believe I was at events that you were at because I went to trans events, and I would assume everybody in the event is either trans or a partner of somebody who's trans or some looky-loo or somebody that referring to themselves as an ally or
yeah.
So I would imagine most people just assume you're a trans woman. I'm wondering, oftentimes we learned yesterday, people with XXY chromosomes can be very tall.
Yes.
If you have the height and you're in the environment, that's the assumption. But then you said you're not a person who, I don't remember the exact words you used, but I'm going to say subscribes to trans ideology, which I don't either. It gets me in trouble. I would imagine you do face that you're in the spaces, they think you're trans, and they expect that you say things in a particular way, have certain beliefs or values. And you already said that you've had backlash within intersex community.
Yeah.
Are you also experiencing conflict in trans community?
The only conflict I've had that always sticks out to me in the trans community is here in Orlando, I've not had so much. I have run into trans individuals, whether it be through dating or whether it just be through social circles. And most have been very welcoming. A lot within that community also do not know what it truly means to be intersex. And sometimes I will try and educate in that platform because I think there are a lot of people out there, and it's true of the intersex community, where they may never find out that they're intersex, right? Unless they go and try and have a baby, or unless they have fertility issues, there's not enough testing going on that's saying, hey, you're intersex, right? You find out almost by mistake. And so I think there might be a lot of people that are in the trans community that have transitioned that do not have a plausible reason to why they felt that way. And if they knew more about the intersex condition and community, then they can sit back down and go through their own medical and go, oh my gosh, I might be intersex. I should go get tested, right? And maybe it doesn't matter that much at that point. But the only backlash I had from the trans community is I had somebody once went in when I first came back from the NIH. I had gone into a local doctor here that the NIH had set me up at the appointment. And the nurse was trying to get me to present the paperwork from my psychiatrist saying that I was in the mental capacity to transition. And the doctor came out and said, she doesn't have to have that. She's not trans. She's intersex. And I'm the doctor. So quit trying to push that narrative. Let her come in, blah, blah, blah. So when I was leaving, this trans girl said, she was being abrasive and rude to me. And I turned around and I look, my ex-boyfriend called me a copperhead. I like to say I'm a rattlesnake, but he says, look, you do not rattle before you strike. You just strike. And it's often deadly. And I'm like, okay, we can go with cotton mouth. But I turned, I don't back down. And I turned around and I asked her, I said, do you have a problem with me? And she said, well, I just think I would love to be intersex because it seems like y'all just get whatever you need and we have to jump through hoops to get it. And I said, you want to change places with me? We can change places right now. And I guarantee that you won't be able to deal with the fact that you only had one testy and one ovary. You won't be able to deal with the fact that you had precancer. You're going to have it. And like, I just started going through everything and just dumped my whole medical thing in her lap. And I said, but by all means, if you want to switch, we can switch. And she just sat there a little slack jawed. And I said, we are fighting the same battles. We do not need to be against each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that you said that. I remember when I first started testosterone, it was under the WPATH standards of care version 6. And back then, it was still the Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association. Mm-hmm. It hadn't become World Professional Association for Transgender Health. And I remember under the Standards of Care SOC 6, there was a little caveat in there, and they said that there should be genetic testing prior to the initiation of cross-sex hormones because there were insurance and medical exceptions for an intersex person. They didn't have to go through the same, jump through the same hoops, and because it was a medical condition versus transsexuality, which was more of a psychological condition, they were thinking. But I know that didn't happen for me, and it didn't happen for a lot of people. I heard that the primary reason was that it was very expensive. I don't know if it still is, but even 20 years ago, it was very expensive to do that testing. But I do remember hearing that there was, in the 80s, a group of transsexual women who were referring to transsexuality as the Harry Benjamin syndrome. They were trying to popularize that by saying that transsexuality was a kind of intersexuality, and they wanted to name it after Harry Benjamin because he was a famous endocrinologist. Are you familiar with that movement? And
we are coming upon our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Julie Mayfield. She is an intersex advocate, influencer, author, and actress who's here with us to talk about her intersex variation, the intersex movement, and the critical urgency for better education among the masses. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
The station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're back from our second commercial break. We're always grateful to our sponsor. You're listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg and our guest, Julie Mayfield. Let's get back to the show.
I am familiar with that movement, but I'm also familiar with the movement that, look, I know everybody needs what they need and they have a right to have those things. I think everybody should be able to live the life that they feel like they deserve to live. I'm sorry, I'm going to get really emotional. I understand firsthand that crucial do or die because I deserve to be here and I deserve to live the life that I want to live, right? But it does come down. I think what's frustrating for a lot of people in the intersex community is, especially as all these laws start to change, is we're literally, it's not about fighting to be seen as much as we're all fighting now for essential care, right? I was born this way. And that's not to quote Lady Gaga or any of the popularity like things that are going on, but I literally was born this way. I can't change it. And I think a lot of people in the intersex community get frustrated when people in the trans community try and use trans as a vehicle to get what they need. I get it. I understand that. I'm not saying it's a choice. I'm not saying any of that. But intersex people literally are born this way, and they're doing everything they possibly can just to survive a little bit longer.
I don't think there's the same critical issue for most trans people hormonally,
right,
that intersex people. But I have met trans people, transsexuals in particular, people who medically transition, who tell their family, I'm intersex.
Because they feel like it's better. Yes, because they feel like it's going to be a smoother journey for them if they say it like that. And that's what I mean. I mean, I understand at the end of the day, we are all trying to do what we can to like matriculate and make the world a better place. And it is sad to me in this day and age that we all have to fight so hard. It reminds me of that scene in Gone with the Wind where Scarlett's digging in the ground for carrots and potatoes. And she stands up and she's so frustrated. And she's like, tomorrow's another day, but I am going to climb and fight to be able to be here. And it shouldn't be that hard. And we're all having to do it because people can't get their heads out of it and just come together and let humans just be humans. We are all fighting. We're all fighting to be here. And now we're all fighting against each other. And it shouldn't be this hard.
No, definitely not. Julia, I'd love to have you talk to us about your book. Tell us the title and also what's in your book.
So my book is called Genderless, Fearless, and Fabulous, The Julie Mayfield Story. And it's available on, it also says an intersex outlaw. It's about 151 pages, so it's a quick read. I mean, you could read it on a plane flight to Ibiza. And then if you don't like it, leave it in the plane back pocket so other people can read it. But it is literally the story of my journey from existence all the way up through about last year. I talk a little bit about what it's like to date as an intersex woman. I really focus on stories and anecdotes and the people that have really crafted who I am as a person, both as Bradford and Julie, and is just all encompassing of the last 50 years. Talk a little bit about the medical, about my variation, frustrations in the world with continuing care and advocacy. You can buy it on Amazon by searching the title, Genderless, Fearless, and Fabulous. There is a 9-hour audio version available on my Patreon account. So if you go to patreon.com, just Julie, and pay the $5 to subscribe to Patreon, you can purchase the audio and listen to and download the audio. Yeah, that's what it's about. It is really collectively just a great way to get my story out. And hopefully it inspires other people to tell their story. Because as I said at the beginning, that's how we change perceptions. That's how we make a mark. That's how we make sure that humanity understands that we all are just trying to survive and that we're here, that we're all part of a greater existence, and we all deserve visibility.
Absolutely. So. Well, Julie, it's been wonderful to have you on the show. I feel like we could just talk and talk and talk because it's not only a fascinating topic, but you're also telling us just stories about your life and your experience that we could dig into more and more and more. We don't have time today. We always like to extend the offer that, guests can come back. We'd love to have you back on the show. But again, thank you. Yeah. And your book is Genderless, Fearless, and Fabulous, and it's available all the places that you can get books. And so go and check out Julie's book. And yeah, let's get this education and awareness out there in the world.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. I'd love to come back. And look, education is the key to everything in my book. Education, education, education. And it's not always fun to learn, but it is crucial and essential to us moving forward as a society and understanding all the nuances of life. So I would love to come back, and I just wish everybody that's listening and anybody that hears this, that you just do due diligence in your own life to pick up a book, to look and really process information, because all the stories that are out there are really important for a reason. And thank you.
Thank you. We've come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. We hope that you enjoyed this hour and that you were able to gain much insight into the intersex population. Until next time, thank you for listening.